Thank you very much, Chairperson, because I played the tennis also during my time.
So did I.
I know exactly what to do with the ball in my court. As long, of course, it is not touched the line. First, let me say thank you very much for the committee to give us the opportunity at the time when we could. To come and talk about our strategic plan. As I always say, the strategic plan is a long-term plan, but year by year it changes its nuances according to the dynamic development of a particular portfolio. In our respect, the portfolio being the sport and recreation. I want Chairperson to say that when Mrs. Ngopane told me about this agenda item on the diary, she thought like you that I would not be readily available to come. But I explained it to Lindy that, you know, I was part of the discussion in 1996 when we discussed the transition of transformation from Senate to the NCOP as the second house of parliament, which many people do not always remember, that the NCOP constitutes the other half of parliament. Parliament is the National Assembly together with the NCOP. And so I said I'm acutely aware of those discussions, and I'm acutely aware of the objective that led us to establishing this council. So I do not want to create an impression, and this is for my department and more than for the NCOP members. I do not want to create an impression that the NCOP is a junior house, or it must have less attention than the National Assembly. So when we can be here, we will be here. In the same way, when we take our questions, we go there, either both of us, or I go alone, or Kat goes alone. Precisely because we think this is an important component of our institution called the Parliament. So we are very pleased to have been able to come today. Now, what we think, Chairperson, we should do first, I agree with you that the annual report issue must come back here. And I am not likely to be here for that, because that is the oversight function which demands of members of parliament to interrogate how the resources allocated to our department were used. And this is mostly a management function. Mr. Of course, a nice group today. I think he too was getting ready for those questions, if not impressing you by word, at least by attire. So neutralize any anger that members might have. But like you say, he's not eight yet. That must still come. Today, we thought we should deal with a strategic plan and explain nuances that will have changed, and explain the continuum that will be found, because it is not a sporadic thought that comes and goes. It is a strategic plan informed by particular objectives, informed by particular realities. Chairperson and honorable members, you will remember that since 2004, when Kurt and I joined the ministry, we had always emphasized the importance of getting as many South Africans as possible to participate in sports, for all the good reasons that everybody seems to have internalized now. Good health, good citizenship, leadership, and all these things. And I'm pleased that everybody seems to be thinking them since we emphasized them. And we're saying about the truth of our circumstances is that access to this basic human right, because sport is a basic human right, declared as such by the United Nations. Access to this basic human right is not even. I don't want to go into the history of that unevenness, because I don't want to raise people's temperature after Easter. This is the time of the year for Christians when they should be living freshly born new life, and all the things that go with it. So I will not go there. I will leave it to the hidden, like that. Yeah. I'm not a born again Christian myself. I'm just a poor sinner saved by grace. What we then said is that unless we bring everybody on board and make access available to everybody, we are not going to achieve for the nation all those benefits or data derived from the board. And for that reason, we launched in July 2004 in Upington our mass participation program. It was a humble beginning. We brought all the provinces there, but even then, it was really a humble beginning. All nine of them attended, but in terms of mass participation, I think it was a humble beginning. Jefferson, in 2008, it would be an understatement to say the response to that initial beginning has been overwhelming. In fact, it is daunting in the light of the resources that are not commensurate with the demand and the response. So the response has been very good. The response has been very, very overwhelming. That invariably challenges us to move beyond that mobilization mode, because the mass participation is equivalent to the mobilization mode in terms of the sociology of communities. And we had to take it to a higher level, the organizational mode. And to that extent, we established our class development unit within mass participation. Yes, they participate in mass, but they must move towards organized participation. They must move towards higher competition if at all we are going to make an impact to the transformation that our constitution talks about. Because we did not want just to have change. We wanted to have change that transforms our society. And this is what the prelude to our constitution instructs us to do. It lists all the reasons why we should do that. To that extent, Jefferson, we thought we should build a club that will build a bridge between the mass participation and enjoyment to the higher level, which ultimately must go to the elite participation by our children, and of course by other people as well. I'm saying this because the old man who just passed away now, what was his name? The 100-meter champion who passed away a week ago. He's got a difficult surname, I think it's Polish. He was over 100 years, and he was still running. So we're saying yes for the young people, but also for those the people of age who can still participate at that level. I know, for instance, that next month some of our retired Olympians in wrestling will be participating in Tunis in the All Africa Championship in wrestling. But we're saying this must not happen in the old way, where it was predictable which communities of South Africa would participate in that. But it must reflect the new nature of our society, that is, the transformed nature of our society. So, Bertin, you must forgive my not transgression, but digression. I was reading last week a very big document that asked them to make a copy of, which has been submitted to the International Rugby Board by the Afro Forum and some allies. Very big. It is accusing us of being involved in an illegitimate transformation program. Of course, they go and fund and fund forever. And most of what they are approving us is the imposition of a quota system to the sports person of production. So it is ridiculous. I mean, this is 2008. In May 2004, the first thing that we made when we came to this ministry was to explain why we do not agree with the quota system, because it does not help us in any way. And in 2008, these fellow South Africans who are very concerned with our sport, they still write to international bodies, accuse us of things that do not exist. And they say these things are being done because, no, we do not want to transform society. No, we wanted to monopolize society, to have it monopolized by one sector of society and exclude the other. Of course, it is not true. What we're trying to do, Comrade Chairperson, is to make sure there is change with transformation. It must change the way things are used to be done and transform the way things will be done henceforth. And that is why I am saying that there is that nuance in our strategic plan now. It is a developmental, upward developmental plan strategy. It hopes to instill dedication, it hopes to instill selflessness, and of course it hopes to instill national pride. The other day we sat with the young Pistorius, Oscar Pistorius, who was the deputy minister and the chief director for that very difficult chief director for client support and other things. The International Athletic Association has denied him the right to participate with able-bodied persons because they think his clips give him an extra strength. In our view, this may well be so. We don't deny that. But we say it must be scientifically proved because it cannot be on the basis of a clip that the basic human right of Oscar Pistorius or any other athlete for that matter must be taken away from them. If the clippers give extra spring or extra advantage, this must be scientifically proven. And then deduction mechanisms could be made in terms of how much he or she gains from these people. So we are not looking at the kind of historians. We are looking at the humanity of this athlete and his South African name and his right to access what the Constitution says it should be accessible to all our children. When young Luke Watson, who is voted the best Super 14 player by his peers, the fellow Super 14 player, is being excluded from playing for his country. It is not because he is white or he is English speaking or anything that we say this is wrong. We say there is no logic in a situation where one who is regarded as the best of his rank in his peers' mind is excluded by an individual subjectivity. This is really what we're talking about. But that document accuses us, you will read it, Chairperson, and I'll make you a copy too. Unfortunately, it is my unnoted comment. Ignore my comment. It accuses us of trying to impose cultural preferences to people whose culture is not akin to those activities. And of course, they isolate sports, they isolate rugby. They say it is not in the nature of Africans to play rugby. This is a white man's sport. Now, I don't know, maybe they're right, because rugby was born in England. And there were no Afrikaners in England when the rugby was born. When it came to our land, it was introduced by English settlers to both Afrikaner and African players alike. And you will know, Chairperson, that until recently, the best rugby players in this country always came from the Afrikaner tribe and the African tribe. This is a fact of history. Everybody, you can look at the first test in 1906, which Paul Roos led, to the last one, before 1994. And you can look at the players of Ghana during that period. There is no doubt in the minds of people who know something about the game that between these two tribes, the Afrikaners and the Africans, because these are tribes, they're not nations. It's a fallacy, this thing of Europeans and Africans. That's absolute nonsense. There's no homogeneous European tribes. These are vision tribes. So I am saying that we ignore those things because they are unscientific. As unscientific as the other pro-apartheid philosophies, anthropology, and theology of yesterday that created us the problems that we have just got ourselves out of. And so we say we ignore that. We build clubs and we build them in a way that will integrate our community. Obviously, there are challenges in that respect. I went to Paris the other day, and there's a playing ground in the center of the town. The colored communities want their own playing ground. The African communities want their own playing ground. But we're saying these challenges can be addressed if we agree with the Department of Local Government, if we agree with the Department of Education, that in the planning of where facilities are planted, we take into account of this imperative of uniting our community. Because if the DPLG simply puts up a lot of houses and things and forgets about recreational facilities, invariably we are going to have with segregated housing. I'm saying DPLG because at the provincial level where it happens, it is linked, housing and local parties. We're going to have the same replication of the segregated area. And we're saying, let us plan this thing together and see how through these facilities we can bring our community together. Chairperson, I'm glad that your committee is also education. Because that led them. We can complain here as much as we like. But the National Department of Education does not build schools. Schools are built at the provincial level. And there is where the plan should be developed conjointly between ourselves and the Department of Education. Because as long as they continue to build classrooms, and as long as those classrooms are put at the top of the hill and in the bottom of the ravine, there is no way our children are going to have playing facilities in those kind of environments. So I'm pleading with the committee that to assist us in our strategic plan of accessing facilities to everybody in order to integrate every community, we must nudge the provincial Department of Education to really take this matter very seriously. We've spoken to the National Department of Education. But indeed, they don't build schools. They don't determine where the school is built. That determination comes from the provincial level. The other challenge, of course, that confronts us, especially in this country, is the advent of what is called the 1992 professional sport. You know, our children do not want to play sports because they want to know what you will get. I was watching last night when all of you were sleeping. There is an aberration of sports in this country also. The sports programs are shown by SABC 3 after 2 a.m. So you have to sit up and not sleep if you want to see what's going on. That's why I know about the wrestling team. because they were on TV this morning. But also on TV this morning was a basketball coaching clinic, slam dunk. I couldn't believe there were so many youngsters playing basketball. I mean to ask SADC3 to give me details of where that was happening, because we need to follow up on that and see how to consolidate those sporadic efforts. But I'm saying we really need assistance in that, even as the coaches are saying, these kids are playing because they want to earn money. Now, when you and I play sports, I always make an example. I was also a boxer in my other life, where we boxed for an orange.
I do.
Well, if you won the bout, you get a full orange. If it is a draw, you get a half orange each. If you lose, of course, you got nothing. But today, children do not play. When I play rugby or cricket or athletics, I ran for the pride of my school or my club. I played for my provincial colors. I did not play for anything else. But of course, I played for the girls. Not anymore. Today our kids want to play for money. There was an Easter tournament at the Dalimpofu village, the third one, since 2 years ago. The reporter tells me there was over 3,000 people there to watch 38 clubs play different types. Female rugby, male rugby, cricket, netball, and so on. And I said, what were the prizes? Prizes were kids, ship, and money for the club. They don't play for Mahala anymore. And they can't, because things are very expensive. So we have to inculcate through our club development the spirit of dedication and selflessness without looking for money. And so we want to urge the members of parliament, when they go around motivating their youngsters to play sports, to play down this pecuniary aspect of it. It cannot be around money. It must be around the core values of sporting activity. We cannot end our presentation without referring to the legislation that the President signed last November, the Amendment Act, which seems to have created this problem with this Afro Forum and other people. We have not said in any section of that act that we want to take over the administration of sports in this country. Even what our friend Carlos Pereira is quoted to have said in the Sunday Times, politicians shut up. Well, I don't want to attack Mr. Pereira, because he's not English speaking. I don't know what exactly he said or what he meant, because I would have wanted him to explain to me what does he regard to be a politician. And what have you got to be a non-politician? And what is a sports person? And how is that different from a politician? I do not want to go into that, except to say that, as a matter of fact, surprising as it might be, I agree with the coach on the issues of how to build a winning squad in 2010. I fully agree with him. He's correct. Which is precisely why we mooted the idea of a national squad in the first place, because all the other coaches before him, including himself now, they are frustrated with the specter of wanting players and not getting them on the field. And this is a problem. They don't have a solution for it. Not even Mr. Pereira has a solution for it. We don't have a solution for it ourselves. We only thing that the only solution that would have is to have the players of his choice contracted to money generating entity like government, and they will always be available when he wants them, and money will be raised to assist them go where they want to go. We do not want to nationalize the soccer teams like you would nationalize the bank or the land or this sort of thing. We were thinking of strategies to assist the coach have unfettered access to players that he thinks should represent South Africa in whichever game. He's mourning about this because it is not happening. The previous coaches were mourning about this. Still, the compeller of the under 23 was frustrated out of existence because of this phenomenon. Now, 2010 is not as far as many people think it is. I agree with him. You will not have a team before 2010, a team before 2010. But I'm not talking about the team here. I'm talking about the squad, which he always talks about. He says he's trying to build a pool. That is precisely what he's talking about. This pool is not going to be easily buildable without a strategy of accessing the coach to the players, which he thinks should make that pool. But the Act does not say that. It does not say you must run rugby, soccer, or anything like this. And we don't want to. But also the Act gives us the responsibility when things are not going right. As you probably know, chapters in there, that things were not going right between the cricket, the president, and the cricket CEO just a few weeks ago, things fell apart. And we were not going to just sit and watch our boys being frustrated and their morale being decimated on the verge of a major fall. And we called them. We intervened. We did not interfere. I always try to explain the difference, that you interfere in an area which you have no stake in. If you have a stake, you can't be called interference. But intervening means to pour water over two fighting bulls. You know, the bulldogs do not stop fighting until you pour hot water on their heads. That's intervening. They're not interfering with the fight. They're intervening in that fight. And that we will continue to do for as long as we have a minute. As a matter of fact, the chairperson, some of the people who say we must stop interfering, they are the first, when things fall apart, to phone us and ask for intervention. So it's a very ingenious allegation, this interfering thing. They understand it. But when they're sitting on this political fora and talking to each other, they try to make political money. It is easy for some people to make easy political speeches. But we are government. In the last analysis, we are the ones who must implement. We can't just talk. When everybody goes home and sleeps or plays with a cat, we must implement. That is why at 3 o'clock I'm still watching the TV 3. Because I want to know what is happening. I listen to 12 down, to the radio program, 12 down. I want to know what the people out there are saying about it. They are talking about it, the road accident. These last 3 days they spoke about the road accident. I want to know. I have heard what they say as the witnesses in our road laws. I've noted that, and I wanted to start that with our colleague, Jeff Hadden. So I am saying this is a difference between being in government and just being a loudhailer. Well, not a loudhailer, but bulldozer. We got to remove the hospital. So we want you, because you supported that effort, to know that there is no change in our mind. There is no change in our strategy. We do not want to interfere with administration. We do not want to interfere with the selection of the administrator. My younger brother is contesting as the presidency of the South African Rugby Union against his current president, Mr. Hosking. I have been asked a number of times what my view is on this thing. I don't have a view. The only view I had is what I had in 2003 when I said he must stay out of rugby administration because it is very contested. He did not listen to me and now he's gone up and up. So I don't have a say. He's an old man. He's 49 years old now.
Really, yeah.
He doesn't take instructions from me. So we don't intervene. I know that the ANC is also branded around to having choices. The ANC as a party and as an organization and as a government, we never ever sit to say who must lead to which organization, who must be the secretary of which structure. That is not our business. And it is nowhere contemplated in that legislation. We don't even ask their political affiliation. I've never asked John Smith to run the party he votes for. I don't care. All I care for is that he must lead our team to victory. I don't ask what their party. I don't care. That's his choice. Well, of course, I care if I'm an ANC functionary walking up and down the street. I will not resist recruiting anybody and everyone. That is my historical task. But as a minister of sport, I really don't care who belongs to which party. It doesn't make any sense. You have criticized us, Chairperson and the honorable members, of being tardy in the provisioning of infrastructure. Desmond Tutu has also criticized us on this. That you cannot have development without the infrastructure. We are great. But we have always reported that the building for sports and recreation program was a temporary program which when it was replaced by the municipal infrastructure grant, which is not managed by us. The MIG is managed by CPLG. Yet, of course, everybody seems to agree with us now that that strategy has reversed our capacity to provide infrastructure for the needy community. We have instructed the DG to talk with the DG of finance and to come forward with a cabinet memo to take our money out of the MIG so that we can speed up again. But this alone cannot help. What is going to help is access to all those facilities, amenities, and indeed the science techniques that make it possible for Matrix to be so big when his age mates are so thin and so small. I asked him once when they were playing weights, I think in 2005. Of course, he told me that the gym work is good, healthy food, and so on. Ryan Abana is a very powerful man. He trains how to run. He runs well already, but he still continues to train how to run. He builds his muscles. He's a big boy already, but he continues. And so we have said we must access those things also to the underprivileged community. And for that reason, we have provided the mobile gymnasium to some communities in partnership with the Rugby Rugby Union. We are hoping to step that up as soon as the DG and that director of the facilities move fast on that. We want those gyms to be available because they are mobile. You can take them here today, next week, take them there, and they are accessible to as many people all at once. But we're also beefing up our technical coordination, technical support coordination for young South Africans. To that end, we have instructed the director for that directorate to coordinate the tertiary institutions that deal with these things, Stellenbosch, UPD, UCT, Heaven, and so on, Pretoria, to see how best to utilize their expertise and how best to fund their skills to the betterment of as many South Africans as possible, not just the students who register in their institutions. We think this is going to be very exciting. Already the academics, and believe me, they are not an easy tribe to excite. I come from that tribe myself. I know how circumstances they can be. But they are very excited. And they think this is something which will change the face of South Africa. Kurt and I listened to a submission by KwaZulu-Natal 2 weeks ago. Very outstanding development program. It's unbelievable. And it's based on this. There's the boys from the hinterlands of KwaZulu. Place them in a district or sub-union development nodes, as they call them, and subject them to these facilities, give them good food, and also give them educational skills. You have seen now how the sharks have suddenly become a cosmopolitan team. Only in 2005, I was criticizing them to be pure white. The sharks team has changed. And the Premier League teams have also changed. The 53 club, the demographics of that 53. It is not what the Afro Forum thinks it is. When we talk about demographics, we're not talking what they're talking. They say we count the number of citizens in South Africa and allocate the percentage to it. It's not like that. It is not like that. It is about the reflection in the team of the demographic society. You can't have the Springboks playing England and you have more black people on the English team than on the European team. It's crazy. It cannot be scientifically correct. But we're not saying we want 20% of the team to be white and 80% to be black. We have never said that. We will never say that because it also does not make sense. To work on those statistical bases. We're talking social integration here. Chairperson, I've spoken too much. All your fault. Because I always insist that people on sport should not allow me to talk too much, because then I never stop. But let me stop at the school sport. Again, in 2004, we said, the starting point for the improvement of sport in any country, not only in this one, is at the school. Because that is where all the youngsters who will be the heroes and heroines of tomorrow will be introduced to sport activity. The research that we received from the CSIR or CSIR indicates that of all the sports participants in this country, the majority of them will tell you they were introduced to sport at school. And believe me, that majority is not from the urban area, it's from the rural area, Nohama. And it is true. Sport at school must receive our maximum attention. We have a problem, I must say. We signed an agreement with the Department of Education in 2005. We thought we were moving this thing forward. But it's like a war. You see, you can have your head of state declaring a ceasefire today, and the war goes on for another 18 months. The generals and the field marshals have not received the news. They still are shooting. That is a problem at school. There is, in my view, and this is my own personal view, there is a total discord in the understanding of how it should be done between the teachers at school and the civil servants in the department. The civil servants mistakenly think that the school sport should be driven by them. And I don't agree with that. Well, I'm very old, perhaps I'm also old fashioned. But in my own experience, school sport is better managed when each school motivates, coaches, and develops its own pupils, learners, they are called today, to participate in particular sporting codes. The department must coordinate how these things get done at the inter-school and inter-provincial level. It cannot micromanage the development of school sport. It's impossible. Mr. Ted Kosi, who was my rugby coach, was also my cricket coach, he was also my athletics coach, he ran 4-4 before he died at different epochs. But he also coached the softball, he also coached the netball, he also coached the tennis. And we became champions. When we were doing Form 4, I think it's called grade 11 now, we had two Springboks in our school. Two lock forwards were playing for the Springboks at high school already, thanks to these teachers who are very busy. I am not stupid enough to think that the current teachers are as adept as Mr. Cook. Most of the current teachers were at school during 1976 to 1980, and they have not seen what a normal school does in the development of sports. That is a fact. And there is where we must assist them, I think. And I think that is where the Department of Sport and Recreation can assist. Bring the veterans, bring the retired the coaches, bring the let them assist the schools to get back. That school in Pretoria, this African Science or something. Yes. Together with the other high school. Or if you go to East London and see Gray High School from Port Elizabeth, playing Central High, or go to Bloemfontein. This school still plays sports in the way we used to play. Now we're saying this cannot be the monopoly of some communities, and it must not be denied other communities. And the civil servants must take into account of that dichotomy and assist those who must be assisted. This is what the Rechtskel and the Apple, which were criticized about all of it. The correction of that yawning gap between these communities. And we know where it comes from. But we can't just sit in the knowledge, we must do something about it. And that is all we're saying. We're saying as a portfolio committee, as a select committee, which also deals with education matters, we really would want you to sit with your colleagues in the National Assembly and assist us as you deal with the directives, both at the national and provincial level, to understand these things. I'm not of the view that they really understand. Of course, they are education specialists. So perhaps it is unfair to expect them to understand this nitty-gritty. Another thing, when they tell me, Pastor, I don't know anything about sports. I just love it. Now, I don't just love it. I'm very passionate about it. And I know a hell of a lot about sports without being a compass. But this is also the truth about me. I know quite a lot about sports. So please help us. Help us to convince our colleagues and your colleagues that school sport cannot be everybody's free for all. It cannot be an orphan. It has been an orphan until 2005. It cannot continue to be an orphan. it cannot also be a superpower. It must belong to the school, that's for sure. The teachers must play a role, that is very important. But the community must also play a role. When I was playing for the first team at Newell High, I was also playing for the first team of FEST, our local club. And that is how you don't lose your player. They play for the high school team. They also play for the community team. When they pass their metrics, they will not be lost to their sport, unlike our children. They are stars at high school, and tomorrow you don't know what happens. That is what I wanted to say, Chapter 3. And again, I must apologize for my long-windedness. I didn't preach this because I was bedridden and so now I'm making up for the preaching. Thank you very much.
If this was a sermon, maybe it's better than a good sermon. Thank you very much. I think, Minister, you interested us for you to speak. I think in the manner you spoke, you have outlined in the real political development of what you have done. Not where other people want to push you, but where you want to go to express what the things are happening. I think you are presentation here, you have touched on many important points, which I think all well members are going to want to interrogate here. Now, before I open to honorable members to engage with what the minister was saying, I just want to find out if there's nobody amongst the officials or even deputy ministers who wants to say something. I do know, should I say that we also expect some, you know, participants to tell us also, but I don't expect the minister to tell us what your budget is all about. To tell us about the different programs, someone who budgeted for the different programs, so that in future you're able to say your budget is so much and we've been able to achieve what you said you're able to achieve with the money that is allocated to you. I don't know if you have to do that now, you have to talk to the issue as raised by the minister first, and then thereafter we can get to that second presentation. Is that okay? So, do you agree with another member?
Yes.
As we now engage with what the minister is saying, the policy direction of the department, and thereafter we can come to the nitty-gritties and the administrative matter. Honorable Stoner?
Chairperson, thanks very much. I want to join you in really commending the initiative of the minister for coming himself, together with the deputy minister, to make this presentation. And in the introductory part of the presentation, where it captures processes that has informed the strategic plan, there's an important aspect there which outlines various sources that inform their perspective, you know, and their strategic plan. And one part side that is alluded to there, Parliament, you know, and I really feel, you know, excited about that. And on a very controversial, yet, he was not chairperson. We must tell the minister that he's not doing us a favor to be here himself. I think we must demand of other ministers, because it's wrong, actually, politically. We are abdicating our political mandate as Parliament to actually accept to be briefed on strategic plan by officials. Officials cannot change. No, I know how government functions. The minister won't be happy if an official comes back to him and says, no, look, Parliament is not there to witness and defend. So, I think, Chairperson, as part of accepting ourselves as Parliament, it's quite critical that we take this example that Minister of Sports and Recreation, you know, is doing to engage all ministers on this important issue. I don't know how we are going to deal with these things, but your guidance will assist us. One, I've got quite a number of questions, and one appreciates that some of the questions one had have actually been already answered by the presentation, long presentation of the minister and his explanation. But there are quite a number of fundamental issues which I really want to hear how the department intends dealing with those issues. The first one, Ted, from me, is collaboration between the Sports and Recreation South Africa and the Department of Education on the one hand. I know at one point there was a memorandum of understanding in terms of collaboration between the two entities to promote sports. Me and yourself and other members of this committee were in one community, Slanghoek, where the only youth that you find there are learners, but there's no school. I mean, there's no sports facility there. There's no, they don't have a field, you know. And I want to say from where I come from, you know, in the Free State, you still have communities where young people are actually anxious and they want to play sports. But municipality does not help, you know, in fact, with a scraper to make them a small field. They don't demand a lot of high-flying things. Just a simple thing. So, while the collaboration between the two departments is critical, within the context of intergovernmental relations, you know, I think also we need to have a sense, what is the collaboration with the provinces and local government? Because local government is critical here, Honorable Tolo. You have got this question that you like to ask. Who is supposed to be dealing with upgrading of facilities within the schools? Because when you go to the school, say, you know, look, public works, and somebody says municipality, and everybody says, no, we don't know, we are not responsible for this. So I really want to hear, Chairperson, what is the strategy in that respect? Number two, we are from a very polarized history, pre-1994, and as a result of that polarization, there's a stigma attached to various sports. From where I have grown up, you know, when you talk about rugby, they see it as a buru sport. You see, when you talk about soccer, the other, you know, side see it as a black African sport, you know, that kind of thing. Now, I want to hear whether there's any strategy from the point of view of the department in terms of demystifying that racial stigma attached to our various sports codes within the context of the development of sports, whether we have that kind of a strategy in place, you know, if the minister could elaborate on that. We are talking about mass participation, but I'm not sure where one should go if one wants to have a sense, you know, of what is the level of participation of various communities, you know, within the context of building the nation in various sports codes, you know. Is there mechanisms, are there systems in place to monitor participation, you know, in various sports codes? Can we say with authority that in this particular province, there's this level of participation within rugby, you know, across the races? I think it's quite important. We cannot talk from where we are as politicians about participation outside context of nation building, and we need to have that sense. What is the attitude? Are we making a shift in terms of attitude to various sports codes? I think that is the first question, sir. The last question. There's no doubt the minister is there to lead this, and I'm not trying to act like a union for our sports. Sports is an industry. Sports is commercialized. No doubt about that. I was whispering when the minister was saying most of the successful people are from rural areas. I was whispering to my colleague here that those who are from Soweto, they become stars for 2 years, and after that, they become something else. But I don't know if you remember what I was saying. Now, the reality is that you have this superstar who plays for a national team, who becomes a role model. But after 5 years, 10 years down the line, this person is a copper, a hobo. Is there a kind of an intervention that the ministry, you know, you go to Bloemfontein and some of these guys who used to be, you know, stars in their own right. You go to Lady Brand, Waka Waka Kwebe, used to be one of the best, you know.
Mm.
That man is it's a pauper, you know. And I know there's a sensation when Brenda Fancy died, the nation will say, no, we realize, you know, the misery of our artists and whatever. So within the same context, the minister, is there anything that government can see, whether from a regulatory point of view, to ensure that we actually develop, assist, and ensure that the legacy of these stars of us within the sports fraternity, you know, is upheld, you know, for future generations to emulate. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and let's thank the Minister and the Deputy for making time to come and brief us. Minister, as much as I heard you saying there's a passion in sport, there is one element in sport that I did not hear you talking about it. That will be your man in sport. Women in sport. And as all we know, you know, due to patriarchy within our society, everything is done through the eyes of a man. whether, you know, right now the hype is around the 2010. And I'm sure because the hype even billions and billions of rands are going towards infrastructure because it's men who are coming to play sport in South Africa. But I'm sure there's quite a lot of tournaments where women actually participated and women came here in South Africa, but there has never been a focus around women in sport. And over and above, Minister, even the funding is so skewed. You watch TV, they show you Castle sponsoring men. They show you Vodacom taking our money, giving it to men. You will never hear Vodacom or Castle say we are giving this money to women in sport. Women in sport, they struggle even to send a team somewhere to actually go and play. It's only SPA that is trying. I have no mother said, you've got quite a lot of teams, your Falcons or whatever, but the investment in women in sport, Minister and Deputy Minister, I think it's something that we really, really are lacking. And unfortunately, you know, I've placed questions that unfortunately the Minister and the Deputy Minister indicated that they were not able to come and answer. And I asked specifically on funding on women in sport. If there can also be a focus, not only should we focus on quotas for men, but let us also focus on quotas for women. To say we need so much women in so much sport, not as administrators who write minutes and that's all, but to participate in sport. And I'm sure as you're playing, you indicated, Minister, that you're playing so that the women will admire you. They also wanted to participate in that sport. I'm sure they can do everything. Yes. I meet women, they say they like this masculine. You must also appreciate the beauty of a woman. Women also need to play sport. Not only should we encourage women to play only basketball, which unfortunately, Minister, time and again, I raise this issue that even in the Commonwealth Games, basketball is only, netball is only recognized as an exhibition sport. It never gets awards. But all other sporting codes, they actually get AMA awards, they get trophies and any other thing. But the netball in a Commonwealth game, they are never recognized in it. So hopefully, in your response, you can be able to say something. I'm sure there's a lot that is happening, but no one talks about it. Even yourself, if you don't emphasize on it. You only emphasize your other interests. Coming on mass participation, Minister, I know it's usually given to provinces to actually take care of. But to what extent does the national department actually intervene? Because, you know, some of these mass participation sports, it's like a hit and run. Gather a few groups of young people there, they must do something, and that's the end of it, Minister. No one is actually monitoring that there's progress to develop young people to actually be sporting people, whether professionally or whatever, any other thing that is actually happening. Lastly, Chairperson, you know, I heard the Minister saying he was watching SABC 3 at 8 a.m. Now I'm whispering to my colleague that maybe we need to find him a woman. He was bored. Sitting there watching TV in a 2 a.m. Oh, your wife was asleep. I'll get you another concubine. Minister, also, you know, I'm sure it's got the privilege of having it here, TV. On Channel 360, the Soweto TV, most of the time they are showing sports. That's why you'll see that there's quite a lot that is happening in our township, but because it is not getting limelight, no one seems to care. And most of the time, we only watch, not that I'm being racist, we only watch whites that are actually playing sports. UEFA Cup, all these international sports, but They seem to be neglecting our very own sports that are happening in our little corners. So hopefully a minister will also watch that. Coming on school sports, we dealt with legislation and we did away with ISASA and it was integrated into the school. But I think the challenge here, Minister, is that even schools themselves, the budgets that they get, whether the department does allocate something that will go towards school sports, you find learners cannot participate in any activities. They can't send their young people to go and participate in certain sports because schools will tell you, we don't have money. We can't send these young people anywhere because we don't have money. Even the purchase of the schools, when they're done, they will tell you that our responsibility is to purchase books. Nothing for sports, nothing for any other thing. So it's like we're still leaving that school sport in doldrums, Minister. No one seems to be taking care of it. Even teachers themselves, they say, we are interested, but the problem is that we cannot invest too much of our time. We're told we must focus on teaching. Anything that you do, you have to do it after school hours. Of course, there is this policy that there must be PT, physical training in schools. But the emphasis still is not there, especially in our black schools. Well, in white schools, you have a wonderful program, they are sports kids. But there's nothing that is happening in our schools within your township. If the minister can also indicate if within the budget that they have in the department, do they also say, education, here is 2 cents. Can you please set somewhere so that as you build this school, you make sure that a complete school has also got facilities, your playing grounds, and any other thing that those learners have to do. You know, we visited one school in Mpumalanga. It was an Elson school, meaning a school with learners with disabilities. They did not even have a swimming pool, but they were getting medals with swimming. Now, it's like when you look at their yard, you just say, it means they imagine how a swimming pool looks like. For them to actually go and practice swimming, they have to go and hire a swimming ground somewhere and pay there and send their learners into the minister. So if anything can be done within the department to also, split this 2 cents that you get, I know it gets the minimal budget, to split it so that then within the building of infrastructure, the issue of facilities within schools is something that is there. Thank you.
No, I think what we should do is to allow the minister to respond to the questions that are there already. Then we'll take the other members to come on the second round. Because I'm afraid we'll bombard them with too many questions and they will remember them all.
Chairperson, we will share answers to these questions. There are quite a few of them, but they are all very critical questions, and I'm very pleased that they have been asked. Moving from the bottom to the top, I want to say that it's very pleasing to hear that Comrade Steve Twete was wrong about swimming. He said, you don't learn swimming from your back, you have to go to the water. And now in this school, they bring medals without the swimming pool. But that is noted. We will ask for the name of the school and its city. You see, because that also is one of what we call for special attention issues, where you have a potential which is visible, which is readily available, and you want to assist in the enhancing of that potential, so that instead of hiring the swimming pools, they can practice in their own area. We will ask for details on that. The question of physical education is one of the issues we signed the agreement on in 2005. But in that memorandum of agreement, it is clearly stated there that physical education is the responsibility of the Department of Education. Maybe the Deputy Minister will talk to that, but because I've always been worried Even Faith, I hear she says PT, which is not physical education. These are two different issues. And I was always worried about this because physical education, PT even, ceased to be done in the black schools since days in the morning. I don't remember when that died. But it does not exist. And so when we signed that memorandum of agreement, I was always asking this question. Who's going to do it?
Mm.
You know? Because you don't have the teachers, you can't teach the subject. You don't have the practitioners, you cannot implement the program. Now, education is challenged with, what is it called? The number of teachers in school, I think.
The
ratios. And I know they are wrestling with this thing. I also know that we have a number of students who have just come back from Cuba because we teach them physical education through the countries that still practice. There's a number of them graduates who have now, but they have not been absorbed in any school program, the physical education. So yes, that is a challenge, which we just have to deal with it, and the heart that is baby, he will be talking to that just now. No time for teachers always makes me angry. You know, because I just spoke about Mr. Kofi just now, who was teaching us literally every sport that we were hired. But he was also our English master, and he also taught in the junior classes. Now, you will remember that in those days, when you were doing the matric, you needed to do 6 set books for English, 6 set books for Xhosa, 6 set books for Afrikaans, and then, of course, your other content subjects, history, Latin, physics, and so on. And that's a lot compared to what these teachers are doing now. They're only doing as far as I'm concerned, absolutely nothing by comparison. And yet they claim they don't like me for things. I've addressed that a number of times. I said you're talking nonsense. There's no such thing as no time. You are doing less time than our teachers did. What are you talking about? But again, I'm contradicting myself because I said I'm talking to people who were not there. They did not experience that, and we need to assist them move in that direction. I think there is still time enough. I went past the, some of the schools in Tumabas, and I'm always in admiration of these young boys and girls with their white shorties, just like we used to do. After school on Wednesday, they just go out and do something. And the teachers are there with them. And this is really what I would want to see one day. I've seen it in some countries. I saw it in Tanzania. I saw it in Newcastle the other day. I've seen it in some areas. It's coming, but perhaps not as fast as we would like it. So we must continue motivating these young educators. The school sport budget, I'm sure the DJ will talk about that, and the deputy minister, we put a lot of money there, actually, on school sport. Perhaps the problem is the management of those funds. You see, because again, the misconception of the department officials of education is that when we budget, 40 million rand for school sport, they think we must just give them the money and they decide what to do with it. It can't work like that. We want to develop the programs, we want to put the programs in place, we want to monitor the programs and fund them. It can't just be fund for nothing. There's something I learned in government that funds follow functions.
Mm.
And so we put a lot of money. Actually, we put more money in school sports than anybody else in any other department of the state. But the colleague will talk to that. Channel 260, I watch sometimes. I watch Channel 260. I watch Channel 360, which is Soweto, Soweto Channel, Soweto TV. I watch 285 Al Jazeera. I also watch the Animal Planet, of course, which is my favorite. I watch SABC Africa. But I know there's a lot of, you see, that is why I am saying one of our shifts in our strategic objective is to move beyond mobilization, because that is a very good exhibition of mobilized participation. We need to take them to the next level now. I was impressed again watching the SAPC3 last night to see some of the projects we launched 2 years ago, producing a national beach soccer team, which unfortunately lost to somebody.
Senegal.
Yes, we lost to Senegal. But it's interesting to see how our homeless people's football that we funded here in Cape Town. It produced some of the stars that play in the Premier League, the competitions today. So those are very exciting developments. But they are simply, but they are simply not enough. They are sprinkles on the beach. They're not really enough. Jefferson, the women's sport. One day you must talk to Natasha Chikla about women's sport and myself. I will not answer that. Talk to Natasha. I have talked with the department for the conferences they hosted, I think, 2 years ago on women's sports. I have also fought with the ex-sports women. You see, because they want to make an academic debate on this. I want to test you on this. You see, my view, and I was raising this view with a group of soccer organizers in Soweto. I can't remember their name. They want to launch a premier soccer league. So I said, fine, that's good enough, but that's limited. What about the non-professional soccer girls? And there are many of them. Believe me, there are many of them. The enthusiasm in soccer and rugby during these last 2 years is unbelievable amongst our young children. But even women activists, I think that they're McCarr on the street. They are thinking on how to be an Ivan Kozla of women's sports. And I'm not there. I'm at the organizational level. How do we elevate it to where it belongs? We fought with South Africa's, but with the cabinet when we came back from the Netball World Cup. Not one of our colleagues knew that, they knew. But the others did not even know that our team had gone to the World Cup, and that they were in the first five in the world when they went to face themselves in the Commonwealth. They were in the first three in Melbourne 2 years ago in the Commonwealth Games. They played good netball, these kids. And I was telling the Deputy Minister just now that last Monday I attended the graduation ceremony of my last born, and lo and behold, there was this lady receiving a doctorate in sports management. Who is this? My God, it is the current captain of netball for that. Yes, it is. They are not only playing it, they are also developing other children, motivating them. This is about how to use sport to build a self-esteem of township girls. I haven't read it, but that's what they kept me. I really want. So I'm saying we are very, very serious about it. It is not visible because you correctly say the broadcast houses are not interested in it. they are negotiating a deal with SABC right now, Network South Africa. I hope they get a good deal. I warn them if they are exploited, they must abandon them and try them to go to other channels. We've got four channels now. So they're coming up all right. They need your help. I'm glad you are very excited. Their head office is right across Loftus in Pretoria. Just as you pass the T junction, Network South Africa is on the left hand side. Please, if you want to visit them one day, go and discuss with them the Gauteng demarcation problem. They are wrestling with us at this point in time. But they are okay. They will be bidding to host the World Cup in 2015, and we're encouraging them. But of course, we must put up the requisite infrastructure. We've got two available in South Africa at the moment. Question of SPA. I'm glad you mentioned SPA. I'll tell them when I phone them later today. You see, because SPA, of all the sponsors in this country, is probably the only one that takes women's sports seriously. They sponsor netball, South Africa. They sponsor women's hockey. And there's more, they sponsor other school activities for women sports. So I'm really pleased you mentioned SPA because they are doing a very good job in that respect. But we must lobby others too to do the same and so on. The legends and the icons of sport becoming hobos and paupers. Well, I always talk about the great boxer of the 50s and 60s. Great boxer. Now you're mentioning some soccer stars that you even know they come from the 50s. You know, they always are lumped together with the housing. If you are in the Eastern Cape, anything up across the Far River is the housing. We have, together with Boxing South Africa, started with the project of putting up an insurance policy for boxers in particular, because they are the first two that come to mind of the good health beings who have really become popular. We have also been discussing, and again, like the teachers of the 70s, I think I'm suffering from the same syndrome with respect to football players. I've been discussing for 2 years now with Lucas Khade, the Phil Masinga, and that generation. You see, because the popularization of our football stars, you know, when we went to Zurich for the World Cup bid in 2004, we met Jabu Pule at the airport, Jabu Matamba now. The boy was stranded. He did not have a visa. He had nothing. All he had was a letter inviting him to work out with a club in Switzerland. We were coming through and he saw this job. What's going on? And he told his story. We quickly put him in our entourage, and that's how he went into Switzerland. Stranded. Mm. Not because he left home to go to Switzerland. Some agent told him, your green pastors are in Switzerland, here is the ticket, go and we'll meet you somewhere. And this is the fate of our boy. Mm-hmm. We have followed the stories about the Benny McCarthy, today he will never play for South Africa, tomorrow this and that. Sit down with this boy and listen to their story. The truth of the matter is that these agents are messing up their life. Mm-hmm. They really are messing up with their life. You can take a wide research to the top players from the old legends of yesterday to the current. They check what academic qualifications they have. Nothing. And so they become easy media for unscrupulous agents who promise them heaven and earth, and they end up without a bit of soil under their feet. this is a lot. I was saying to Lucas and company, look, I know you are not lawyers or anything, nothing of the sort. Why don't you form a company which you become board members of? And the responsibility of your company is your younger brothers and sisters. Protect them from these strange contracts, from these strange conditions, and from these unscrupulous things. So when youth get contracted, you get the lawyers who will be advised by yourself from your own experience what issues to look out for in the contract. Now we're discussing this. Unfortunately, they are not moving. There's a new group of rising legends led there by Baloi, the Sundown scorekeeper. He's the president of this new South African Football Players Association. One of their items of concentration is this one. Right? They're looking at other things, HIV and AIDS and so on, skills and education. But they are also looking at how to establish this entity to protect the rights and the lives of these young people. We will help them. We really want to help them. We thought of insurance for them too, but it's not possible because of the kind of contracts they get themselves embroiled in. Mass participation, where is it happening? Is it a hit and run? Yeah. You see, mass participation in its current form, the people of mass participation will tell you where it is. But it is divided into what they call half. I don't like the word, but they continue to use it. Into half, where they are doing certain mass participation activities. Not in a one-at-a-time kind of way. They are supposed to have an ongoing participation. We have advised the department to redemarcate the mass participation hubs and synchronize them with the local municipal boundaries so that citizens have predictability of where the hub is participating. In Patras, they must know where it is going to happen this month, where it is going to happen in June, and so on. This is our target. We're trying to streamline this boundary because it did not coincide with the municipality boundary. We want it now to coincide. This is not just a blob from the sky. We saw it happen in one municipality in the Eastern Cape. In my other life, I was the premier of that province. We started what we call the mayoral cups. In the last 2 years, I have visited that place once every year, and I've seen how that has grown to become a hub, if you like. The whole municipality comes together. It plays a number of different games in September. But those are preceded by local competition. So September is the penultimate of the competition. And we're trying to convince everybody to move in that direction. Because if we can achieve a hub per watt, which feeds into the municipal hub participation, which in turn feeds into the district and the province and to the national, this is what I call the triangle of sports development. Not everybody agrees with me, but as I warned, I'm very old-fashioned in this. I believe this is how you do it. You start from the broad base and gradually you move them to the hub. This is what we hope it should achieve. The DG believes that in order to do it effectively, you have to put a provincial monitoring entity. The provinces are supposed to do that, but the province is a province. So we think we should do that ourselves and have an entity that coordinates and monitors the ongoing activities of that house. Stigma attached to sporting codes. Gert PH is Gerard Schumann. You know, I saw Gerard that when we were doing what? Remember in the season last year? Limping. And I looked at his upper leg. It was blue from stick fighting. So even stick fight is no longer a cup of steel hoot. He got there and he passed at him. And he enjoyed it. He wanted to go to the next tournament. So we came to Pal for the game about 3 years ago. And the winner of the four-tracker game, yes, game, was a woman from Mpumalanga, a black woman from Mpumalanga, beating all those big guys. So we're trying to de-racialize or to de-stigmatize again. Now I know this thing of rugby for white and soccer for black. It is a young generation thing. Because, you know, when I played for the Eastern Province in the tournament of 1967, one of the strongest provincial teams was the Transvaal, it was called, the African team of Transvaal. Very, very strong African team. But you know what? Most of those players came from the mines. They did not come from the country. That is why the stereotype is this is the poorest sport and soccer. And that is what the Afro Forum says. It says soccer is for Africans and it is not told to transform. There are no whites there. They forget that Lynn told you was the captain of the soccer squad. They have not heard of Eric Kinkler or Mark Fish. They have not seen these youngsters who are playing football today. I don't know where they live, these people. But I'm saying that it's true, there are those stereotypes hurt. And I were asked by Pretoria World School, Pretoria High, which question was again raised in the SMS to Buyo Moody of Morning Live. Are there going to be quotas for white soccer players for 2010? That's a question that was asked in 2004. And we said, no, there will be no quotas. All you need to do is to open your facilities to the children of Atlasville and all those townships to come and play soccer. And your children will also begin to play soccer. You don't need quota. Just open up. They said, what about the wear and tear, the maintenance? That we can talk about. It's another question that you raised. Who is responsible for wear and tear maintenance? So I'm saying that the transformation is going to come from those initiatives. And as a matter of fact, it does come from those initiatives. I watched a girls' team in Kelvin Day. It was a mixed girls team, I think they were junior highs or something, playing soccer, female soccer. And that is good. That is what we encourage all the time. Who is responsible for this team? The MIG, Municipal Infrastructure Grant. That is where the money is. The problem here, Jefferson, is which perhaps the MPs can help with, is lack of knowledge. You know, in the financial year 2006-07, I looked at the MIT report. The only municipalities that had applied for upgrade and maintenance funds were from the Western Cape. It was Drakenstein and another one here next to the metro. They applied for money to pay for the caretaker in one case. In the other case, they applied for money for watering, sprinklers for watering. The other municipalities don't know about that. At any rate, when we tell them, they will tell you that the MEC take the MIG for sport and put it in roads and other things anyway. So that is a problem with the MIG. The MIG is not doing what it is supposed to do because we are not in charge there. And the MG, MIG is people who are much for houses, they go for it. And people much for water, they go for it. And there's nothing. That's why we want it back. But the upgrade is a responsibility of the municipality. And we've been saying this to the municipality ever so much. The Department of Education and our collaboration. I think I've just answered that. But I wanted to say that in that facility, it is true that some of the things that our people play on are not really fit. They are grazing them. They share them with the animals and put them in there. And this is what we're trying also to ask for municipalities to allocate. That is why we want joint planning with the PSG and education. So that we can plan jointly the utilization of available land so that these things are not left unattended. IGR, we must ask the DG, she's gone now. She's from DPLG and she was responsible for IGR. Like Minister Mpasa would say, it is extremely difficult to call ministers together. So the IGR is not going to work until the heads sit together and plan and send down instructions to the officials. We've discussed this with housing, and we agree we must plan human settlements together to put money into these facilities. We agree with education, but as I say, housing does not build houses, they are built at the provincial level. Education does not build schools, they are built at the provincial level. And this is how it goes. Maybe we will get over it, inshallah.
Chairperson, thank you. If I might just come in from the seat. Chair, if I might just speak to the comment for something. The biggest supporter of gender and of women's sports is stupid. He will not say that. I can speak about that because I work with him. And perhaps the observation is correct when you said that we are not marketing what we do to promote also international tournaments in South Africa. And if we just go from recollection, now we had the Women's World Cup cricket here, sponsored by our department. Every year we have the Women's World Cup of Golf, sponsored by the Bantu Sport Delegation. We have various activities taking on. This year we'll be sponsoring the women's soccer tournament that's going to take place. We're talking about boxing. So, in fact, the chair, we are so pro-gender that I think with the DC, we are now in the minority there. 63% of the department comprises women in sport and recreation. So, we are now the endangered species. From a chair, just something else, another observation, and I'm observing this because you're dealing with the provinces. In many cases, provinces treat sport like a stepchild, and you find it like in the municipalities, and like the MIG, we compete against the soft targets, library. Clinic, those things. So we're at the backbone all the time, and a And my concern is just the concern that we raise here, Chair, is that some, in some instances, the DORA grant is viewed to be kind of a budget relief for the province, which doesn't budget sufficiently for sport and recreation. So the DORA grant is sometimes also there to be relief and not the substitute what they have to support what they have to. Chair, but Mfundisi asked me to just say something about school sport, but before I go there, physical education in schools, and Comrade Faithful asked the question now, physical education in schools is not satisfactory, because they see it as part of the life orientation cycle. And they will tell you that of the fact that Mark Stone and Mark Zuckert was physical education and life orientation, that's not good enough. We need it as a standalone subject item on the program and the roster of the school. And we don't need a big place to teach physical education and to get children active and to get them to participate. So we trust and hope that we will have your support in this regard. Chair, but when we come to school sport, we also inherited a certain situation, and we have to take that into account as we endeavor and trying to run out school sport mass participation. And the Minister observed absolutely correctly that there's here and there a misunderstanding of the role of the federations, and what role they should play, and the role of the officials and the teachers here and there. But in essence, the principle of who's in there from the teacher's side is something that we must have. But we also have to broaden the scope there. At present, we are focusing on under 15s and under 17 national tournaments. We have to broaden the scope right from grade 0 to grade 12. And that is a bit hampered by budget constraints. If we look at this year, I think that the sports director has 41 million rand available for that. And I think in terms of the DORA grants, we'll be transferring close to 100 million or 100 million rand to mass participation school sport. Now, only that will give you. It's a lot of money, but it's not going to be enough to address the needs. So we will have to be proactive in how we roll out these programs and how we get our children to go forward, and we are discussing it at the present with our sister department education, and hopefully we will be able to come with innovative plans to roll out proactively programs that will make more children and involve more children. But we are facing challenges of equipment, we are facing challenges of poverty, especially in the poverty nodes of this country, where parents just don't have the money to make it possible for their children to participate. Now, you may know, Chair, as a department, we've made it possible and said that once a child goes to national tournaments, he or she will not be excluded because they cannot afford it or their parents can't afford it, so we pay for it. But that also, once you create the opportunity on the one side for children on the other hand, it's taking away from the budget to roll on other necessities. But we think that's the correct approach, not to discriminate against the child on the grounds of the economic status, and we think that we have your support, we know we have your support in that policy directive to make it possible for children to participate. But really, the challenge of school sport will forever be with us until the day we have succeeded in eradicating the lack of facilities in communities and in schools. Now, I don't want to go there, but until the day we get to the point where you say a school has to have a toilet facility for boys and girls, it has to have a desk and a chair and a blackboard and certain other things and library, and a school can't be a school without a sporting facility, basic multi-purpose sporting facility, we will forever face a challenge here. What we are doing now is we are trying to look at sharing facilities, the Minister alluded to that, but also something where we run out these facilities, making it available for the communities. We are planning to do these things here and then we succeed, but it's a massive task that we have to tackle and to fulfill. So Chair, I hope that the sooner we run out building for sport and recreation, whatever form again with our department, that is in fact something that's coming in this financial year, perhaps the minister will speak a bit more about that. We will be able to start to address, according to the national plan, the need for facilities and the skewness to try to correct what we have to correct in terms of that. But, Chair, thank you so much for the opportunity. Can I just share something in terms of racial stigma? And I share this with the committee on a lighter note. I was talking on a program the other day in Stellenbosch, called Woordfeest, and I don't know which of the members listened to that. And the discussion went about specifically this thing, soccer is for the English speaking and the black people only, and black people only for the Afrikaans speaking people. You're talking about transformation, and I said, no, this is the problem, it's a perception, and what's being done by the elite schools in this area to eradicate this, and I mentioned the name of the school, Paul Roos, and I said, what is Paul Roos doing to promote soccer and to give the children access to soccer and allow the children to make the choice and not decide for the children? Afterwards, I had to swallow my words, Honourable Minister, because Paul Roos contacted me and they said that we are the only school here, elite school, so to say, that have five teams which are playing in the league and so on. But when I started questioning them, yes, they think that they're doing very well. But if you compare what they do for rugby in terms of their academy system and the league for soccer, there's still a disparity. So we're not condemning that. We must encourage them to get soccer up to that very level and to make sure that the facilities are available. But I just thought I'd share that I was an outward third minister because I said they do nothing for soccer. And they're trying to do something.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister, for the responses. We've got a challenge of time. We have some challenge of time. I am going to allow all members to ask the questions that they have that they want. I'm not going to address anybody. But maybe, depending on how many questions are there and the answers are right, we might have to postpone the second part of the presentation, the budget and the rest, so that we know to deal with those things. But let's hear the questions now and see how long we're looking. We're looking an hour, it's 12 o'clock now, by one or the other team.
Thank you. Thank you, Minister, and the Deputy Minister and the officers here. I is it working? Am I audible now? I saw. Okay, thank you. Minister, I think there's quite a number of things that you've actually shared with us that have been a concern to some of us in our communities. You know, without being on a political podium, but on the first, we are members of the community before we become politicians. And some of these things are actually bothering us. May I start by saying that some of us have played soccer, not at a professional level, but at the highest level, the community level, where we were stars in our own right. And now, when these things are not happening, you really feel a little bit disturbed by non-activity, and the activity is not taking place there. And I'm very happy that my son is actually showing signs of being a good soccer star, but I'm trying to find a place for him. He's only 10, but that's the issue that is bothering me, sport development. You know, as much as my let me put it in this way, that my biggest challenge that I find us to be facing is, you know, cricket is played predominantly, as you said, by, you know, in the Transvaal where I'm coming from, it's predominantly a white sport. It's different in the Eastern Cape,
rugby the same, but soccer is played by us. But most when you go up north in Limpopo, the only sport that most of us will play will be soccer, because facilities were closed to many of us. And now fields were open for us to throw stones and do all other things that were there. But in my community, I had two tennis courts that were built. They were never used. In the last few days, when I went past looking for my animals, and when I passed there, the facility is actually getting downgraded. I called Tennis South Africa for them to assist. I can tell you, I've never got any help, because I'm saying here is a facility professionally done, you know, but it's not used. The challenge is the rackets are very expensive for such a community, and it's not about getting us as a person to coach, but for kids being there, as you said, Minister, many of us have got some sort of skills to do many things at once, and you need those kind of facilities where that equipment, where that facility can be used, but it's now getting run down.
Where?
In Limpopo,
where?
Andramak, my village. And the last time when I debated, I know the minister, when you debate, you were saying to me, I think it's the deputy minister, I can't remember. You were saying, what have I done? But I could not stand up and respond to you. But but that's a challenge that I have, and I'm saying some of us are willing to do something. If the department can say, do it. Next time when I debate, you say, we gave you this, and we are still talking about this thing. And you know, being a politician is one thing, but being in the community is what most of us want. And that minister, I will actually say, I really want to see that facility revived. The municipality is failing because it's a rural municipality, as you have alluded to. There are a number of challenges that are there. And in your center of Bochum, you've got well-developed netball courts, professionally done, but they are not even utilized. And I'm saying, it is in the distance of 24 kilometers where you got this facility. And I believe that when these facilities are there, we can try to use them and encourage these people that where these sports have not been played, where they can be played. Now, that is my biggest worry. There are many places that I can talk about, but these are the issues, places that are at the top of my head, because facilities are there, but they're getting run down. The one thing, Minister, that I want to check with you is that in cricket, rugby, and cycling, which is very expensive sport, of course, I don't want to go into that. I know how expensive it is, and I know that at an early age, a person should be developed, the diet should come in terms of your bone structure to you for you to participate in cycling. But I have a belief, Minister, you'll correct me, to say maybe there's a need for us to develop specialized academies, where you have an academy together with the Department of Education to say, you've got this school or whatever you call it, where learners that are there doing academic work, they can actually do cricket, they can actually do rugby, however it's designed, so that in the next 10 years, when the federations are not doing anything, because sometimes we expect them to put facilities in place, but federations tend to be more concentrating on making money, and so on and so on. But I believe that at a level of the sport, in 10 years' time, if we got academies where we know that there's a cricket academy in South Africa, you have to go in the Eastern Cape if you've got a very good cricketer. If it's soccer, you go to another province. If it's rugby, we have this academic stretch countrywide where they are specialized, and we know these kids can go there, and I believe that in 10, 15 years, we won't be talking about quotas, because the schools and these academies would have done something. And federations, when they fail, these federations are not for failing us as a country. Because the Department of Education and ourselves, in terms of that memorandum of understanding, perhaps those kind of structures, if they are put in place, I have been a principal before I became a politician. Somehow I have an idea of what I'm talking about. And somehow I understand what the minister would say. The officials, civil servants from the government, other departments, they misconstrue what the sport, school sport is, They want to take away from teachers. And I can tell you, teachers say, well, do it. And when they say do it, the facilitator for the school, or they are in the community, who's going to take care of the learners? So teachers there do not understand what they're supposed to be doing. Teachers are somehow excluded, and therefore they are armed. At the end, our children are the ones that are suffering. So I have this kind of a thinking that I believe it can take us very far. Your sport, like your table tennis. When I grew up, I played soccer. The 10th grade people needed me because I was good. Because once you're good in one sport, chances are you'll be good in the others as well. Your volleyball people needed me. But because I liked more soccer, then I tended to say to them, well, sorry. Because as the minister said, when you play soccer, there's a crowd, and some of them are men and girls, and, you know, you start to want to shine. Because you want to pick them. So I'm saying, minister, as a department, perhaps, I may be dreaming, but I believe perhaps this is the thing that can assist us. It's more of a comment that I need to check with you. How do you go forward with that, that kind of thing?
Thank you.
Last one,
Sudhima. Thank you, Minister. Chairperson, I think the Minister dealt with my concern partially, but Minister, the MIG fund itself that is supposed to assist us with our facilities, I think it's currently located with local government, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And the reality out there is that if one look at the socioeconomic circumstances that prevail at grassroots level, you find that municipalities will then decide, no, let's rather use these funds for something else instead of for, you know, sports facilities and so on. So I'm not saying we must remove it from local government. But somehow or the other, I think we need to ring fence a certain amount to say, but at least 5% or 2% must be allocated to upgrade sports facilities. Or the second option would be let it rather than come back to the Department of Sports, so that we can make sure that we improve our sports facilities. And Chairperson, another tricky question that I would like to ask the Minister. Sport is a concurrent function, which is a GPU4 function. Now, I know the minister can preach until he turns blue in his face. But if provinces decide that they're only going to budget X amount for sports, then they are going to do that. And I think it makes life a misery for the national sports minister. Now, my question relates to the question of concurrent function. Minister, it is not about time for us to revisit this particular matter, because it's not only your department that is suffering. There's also education and health and so forth and so on. Perhaps it's about time for us to say that, is this system really working properly for us in South Africa, seeing that we are a developing country? Thank you, Minister.
Thank you, I don't hope the minister will also sideline me with my questions the way I'm sidelined by my own chair. I sincerely agree with you when you say all sound at school. I agree on that one. I agree on the importance of getting as many South Africans to participate as we can. And I also agree with you when you say that a human basic right was denied. I don't want to dwell on the past, but it was denied. I agree when you say unless we bring everybody on board, we will not achieve what we want to achieve. I totally agree. And I agree when you say that, and I'm grateful to hear that now in 2008 you have decided to move on to higher competition and to make participation. You know, most of my colleagues spoke on the rural areas, and I also feel passionate about the rural areas and the rural schools that do not have the resources. I believe we have great talents in our region. I believe we have great leaders in our rural schools. And I also believe that we can have better citizens
seeing that we have the potential, but I'm worried about the talent that goes wasted, especially in our rural schools. Because if I want to talk about talent, unfortunately, that in one of the schools that does extremely well, and even my area, and I'm grateful that you actually mentioned it. My concern is that so many times the Department of Education came to this committee and the things that were put before us never ever materialized. Many of those things, and many times I've spoken to Mr. Frederick on resources for rural schools, because we have this problem with the youth, where youth really goes astray, and I don't even need to mention and go into that. And I believe that our people like sports, that they like singing and dancing. See where the best prize comes from. See where the best sports come from. And we are actually not working towards that goal to get our children, to get that combined effort, everybody into the sport. I would like to know, and you must ask me if I'm wrong when I ask this question. We need a plan, and we need, and your strategic plan, that your plan is excellent. But are there any time frames set to achieve our goals? Are there any time frames set to reach or to achieve our goals set in this strategic plan? And I know it will not always be, we will not always reach our goals at the same point in time that we have set, because certain issues work against us, but are there at least some time frames set? And then who will monitor? Because I believe in monitoring. If these things are not monitored that you have in mind, and which are excellent ones, we will definitely not succeed. And my third question then, will the department intervene to help to achieve our goals? Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any, because this is a little bit of our question, because there are any other questions allowed. Any other person who wants to ask any question? I've got two questions here myself that I want to put to the minister. We have been talking about this funding. As far as I know, the some resolution coming. So they said that they must be dealing to meet funding and, you know, the money that is supposed to be there for sports facilities. And one would have expected that that happens in this financial day. No, the financial year that starts for me, have we been able to achieve that healing? That's my first question. The other question is, you know, South Africa, when you compare our country with the whole of Africa, in the different sporting codes and the like, we are better organized than many, many African countries. And we also spend more of the input, financial input, into all these sporting rugby, it's far more than many, many other times. But the output is less. If you look at the amount of money that, for instance, Zimbabwe we put into, for instance, soccer, and look at what we put into soccer ourselves and in South Africa, you'll find that it's far the other day that I suggested that the league in Zimbabwe will cost something like 3 trillion. Yeah? 3 trillion. But that's amounts to 1.7 million, you know. But I'm saying with a lot of money in it, nothing gets out of this money less. It's many, many sporting codes. Maybe you say it's like being the other side of the cricket. And it's many sporting codes, you put in more money. That's what I'm saying.
But you have octet trillion.
Why is not getting zero for money in so many sporting codes in South Africa today? It is because of the nigger.
What is the octet trillion? Is it dealing?
My other question is readiness for 2010. The other day we were told that PE cannot
may not
host the Confederation Cup. What is the situation now?
May not,
and
not
the
cannot.
The situation changed so much so that can PE now, I mean, they want to hold the Confederation, the stadium for me. I've been hearing over the media that the problem of fund escalation, peak escalation. Are we able to
move to
SA
Canada?
We all
lose
escalation. How serious are they to escalate? There's some information from local organizing committee, and even from your department, I think, so far,
Why is it that he's involved in this? Yesterday, someone was talking about something. Someone has resigned from the local organizing committee. Well, why is it that he's involved? What's the problem? Is there a problem in there? What is it? Are we going to get a position to solve that problem ourselves? We don't have very, I say, significant people that are resigning there to the disadvantage of the country. The national key. You're talking about the whole question of nationalization of the national key. I've heard a lot of people touching holes over the media and the like. So what came to mind then was that it looks like what you said here today was that there is misunderstanding of what the hundreds of what the British South Africa mean and what actually came out in the media. Are you going to sit down with for instance, local organizing committee, including the coach and the like? Because the coach said, I think he was saying that it is something to speak about a bullfight. And it's something, it is something to speak about it. And something else to get in the ring and fight the boot. Are you going to have to sit down and be able to throw those ideas and say, this is what it is? But someone was saying that in Japan they did it. They did it in South Korea and all these things. And they were able to move up. They were knocked out very late in the competition. So I'm saying that, maybe it's a time for you to sit down with them and, so that they understand what you mean by all those things like that. Now, on page 5, I think, of this document that we have here, somewhere there, we're talking about what are the key challenges. Talking about transforming of sports, including team names, emblems, national symbols, blah, 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 blah. What do you mean, team name? I don't want to say the issue where the department will now want to name the team, because that team will now, from now on, will be called Transparent Saturday. Because it might actually be misinterpreted out there. Can we care to know exactly what you think that we mean by that? Those are things that are questions that I want to ask. I don't want to say, from 2002 or so, or 2001, there's been this policy in the ADA in the country. At schools, when you build a new school, it must have sporting facilities. A complete school must have sporting facilities. The problem is building schools without those sporting facilities. Defying the national policy in other ways. It comes back to what do you think that the type of arrangements that we have, these concurrent things, is it correct? I'm staying aware of you want to look at a possibility of rearranging things. Because the mentor of this education are talking about that thing, as it is now, we have a situation where you speak about concurrent power. But financially, there's no concurrent. The federalism in terms of the fiscal federalism. Political is looking concurrency, but in practical terms, when you talk about money for sports and recreation, it is in the provinces and not with you. Yours is not for administration and you're able to take that and try to help, but practical, you don't get money to actually do certain things in the province. We have to reorganize the situation as it is, what it is that can be done, in order to address this fiscal, thank you.
You really hate it, eh?
Chairperson, I hope you have not
crossing the floor.
Successfully convinced me to marginalize Mrs. Lamolo. Because I wanted to start with a question. Just to make sure we don't leave any believe no aspect of them on that. But I will try then. The last question which you raised about the education policy and school facility. Like I said earlier, is a product of the lack of joint plan and compliance with standards and norms which Gert alluded to when he was speaking about defining what a school is, how many classrooms, how many laboratories, and so on. This is what I call the standards and norms. It doesn't exist, and as such, that policy it only remains in the file. You see, because I come from the Eastern Cape, and if you go there and look at the schools you built, and those built before our time, they don't seem to have been planned according to that policy at all. There's no conscious planning of a school where you can provide those facilities. As I say, to put a school at the top of the mountain, where are you going to be the school facilities, the sport facilities? Put them on in the ravine. And for that reason, we have been saying that we are not going to ask education to raise down this building. Rather, we must, together with DPLG and education, see how to plan the provisioning of what used to be called the second facility. Both facilities and equipment, by the way. Because as an old teacher from the rural area,
yeah,
we know that some of our athletes have never seen or never held in their hands a javelin, proper javelin. They use broomsticks and all these other things. They have never had a short football in their hands.
Stones.
Yeah. I'm now talking about 2008. If these things happen, I have seen young men with beautiful bodies, hosting the minister, look at that, of bodybuilder. So I want to see your team. They are using sandbags. I mean, this is a reality. And we know for a fact that the country, we're not going to address those needs in the immediate future. In the long term, yes. In the medium term, we'll let us deal with a sizable percentage. But in the immediate, and given the fiscal, federal fiscal, what did you call it? Fiscal federalism. And what the third called the add-on mentality with respect to sports facilities. And of course, what Mr. Zimmerman said about the social pressure on the fiscal. We know we're not going to which is why we wanted the national lottery in the first place. When we discussed the establishment of a national lottery in 1990-1991, we anticipated this. You know, we sat there in what was called the Donors Protector. We discussed this thing, and we said, because of this pressure, there must be another fundraising entity. And we looked at other countries, and we thought the national lottery. Now, I don't know where we lost it. Somehow we blended up with PPI, and now we compete with SPCA and Crazy. Seriously. What? Bundled together, we compete with those entities from the entity which we designed because we wanted it to assist in the sports facility. So, I don't know how our committee is that thing. Again, this thing really depends on the will on the part of the other two departments. We do have the political will because we know the pinch is on our feet. But it will depend on our colleagues on this joint planning for the delivery of this policy. You have now raised the question of the names and symbols and emblems. I'm glad you did. Now, you know, in 1906, the South African Rugby 15 had a tour of England. And their captain was Paul Woods, after whom the school captain talked about was named. A brilliant, brilliant player, according to the documents. After wiping out the English, the report said he was then asked by the reporter, "What are you called? You play so well, what are you called?" And he said, "Well, today we played so well and we ran like a Springbok. I suppose we are called a Springbok." And that's how the national teams were called Springbok, from the legacy of Paul Woods' team of 1996. Now, in 1991, the National Sports Congress had, after a long discussion since 1990, in 1991, we went to Port Elizabeth. Ironically, the venue was the Springbok Hotel at Nelson General Motors to discuss this thing. The Bill Jardine, myself, and I can't remember who was, there were three of us. We were asked to make proposals of what an integrated national symbol should be. And of course, we came with our proposals, but Bill Jardine brought fish igloos, and another fellow brought running kudu bull. And I proposed that the protea and the face would like to know that one of the issues I raised was this masculinity and chauvinism of these names and blah, blah, blah. And I was saying perhaps we need to move away from that and take into account the other fauna issues of our country. And of course, I was talking about the history of the protea as a national flower, and it is. I won the day, and that is how the project was born on the emblems of our sports team. Now, when we united the rugby in Kimberley in April 1992, the issue of the symbol of the rugby team was a very hot issue. Of course, Dr. Craven had his own story about the tail of the springboard, where should it look, and so on, and why it should be missing. And we were fighting about it. We negotiated, because the perception was there, even there, that the ANC wanted to own rugby. And the doc said, "Okay, we will give you the black, green, and gold. Give me the springboard." And I say, "No, that is not it. It's not change we're looking at. I repeat this. It's not change we're looking at. It's transformation." Some people don't understand the difference, but ultimately, a committee led by Judge and Party, who is now in Group and then I think, was asked to look into a transitional mechanism. They came back with the South African Rugby Union of the time, that there's the two proteins and the Springbok head in the team. And the South African Rugby Board and the Springbok. So they came back with a transitional emblem of the Springbok jumping over this two proteins and the ball on his head. Of course, we're all moaning about this. They said, "No, we must put it next to it. No, it will eat the protein." Rugby men are crazy men, you know, they are very crazy, they're very nice people, and we think, we're very passionate about our rugby, they live it, we look at all those things, how should the hoof look like, why the, I won't say why the team should not do this, the dog has a graphic way of explaining it. But ultimately you had the transitional agreement, which had a time frame. That time frame has expired, I think, a year ago, and now roughly must revisit that. But in the meantime, our football team was losing, and everybody was now beginning to ask, why are they called Bafana Bafana anyway? When are they going to grow up? You know, that's why they lose. Because I tried to explain this in the media. That this is a linguistic issue. Bafana Bafana in Zulu might seem like a young boy, but in Xhosa, it's a very pride, very pride of the nation to have a Bafana. Bafana was so very, very proud of it. But, you know, like again, the stereotype, the majority of the knowledgeable people about football will come from the predominant language speaking area. And they say, no, it's not fun of a fun. So, when the Springbok team came back from Paris with its Rugby World Cup, at the reception, the president raised this question of coming up with a respectable name for our team and the nation building name. By which time we started to discuss within the ministry the question of legitimizing names and symbols and get out of this contestation about the names. I have been asked to make a ruling on this. I have preferred not to. I prefer that the Rastan Nation must engage in a debate on this, which will culminate in a product which all of them must own. Obviously, I'm informed by my political activity. I remember how much it took us to come with that logo. I know how it took us 18 months to come up with the flag. And the national anthem, long after the election in 2005, we're still discussing the national anthem. So, thinking that this kind of engagement might also lead to South Africans being educated and enlightened, first of all, about the origin of this thing, and ultimately making up their minds. Because I don't want to decide for my children what their team must be called. I'll be too biased. I could have been a Springbok myself. I refused for particular reasons. So I do not want to take that prejudice to determine what our team must be called. We have asked the DG to initiate the process of preparing for that national debate. We hope by the end of June we shall have finished that. And then if they become Springboks, a South African team, that must be a product of a democratic process. If they become Proteas, somebody was saying they should be, I get a lot of calls. Some say they must be rhinos, others say they must be elephants. They've got a whole range of names. That's fine. Let them throw up and explain why. So that is basically what they were saying. We, you know, South Africa is a very interesting country. You know, the rugby team of New Zealand is called the All Blacks. But on their chest, they have the silver fan. That is their national symbol. The netball team of New Zealand is called the silver fan. The cricket team is called the black caps of New Zealand. The English team has a red rose. It's not called the rose. They are called England. The French team has got the cockerel. But they are not called the cockerel. They are called the tricolor. And so on and so on. But South Africa is frenziedly married to this one symbol. We want them to get out of that frenzy and see what to call their team and what name, what emblem, if it is be, to give to our national team. I was ready to host the Conservation Cup in Nelson Mandela in 2009. The last report on this matter to the local organizing committee came from the technical committee of the industry board in the presence of all the FIFA officials. And it said, we don't think Nelson Mandela Bay will be ready to host the Confederation Cup. Now, that is what we now know. We asked them, what has changed since November? Because in November you said PE will be ready. And they said the time frame has changed. In November, FIFA had said the stadium must be ready by the end of March 2009. And now FIFA says the stadium must be ready by December 2008. And they said, why is that? They tried to explain the chairs, they need to know how many seats and so on. They said, yeah, but we asked that question in November already. And you told us you wanted the frames of the seats to be known by October 2008. It has nothing to do with the condition of the stadium, watering of the grass and cultivation of the precincts and the cushions. You told us those were peripheral issues. So we agreed, the chairperson, that FIFA had shifted the proverbial goalposts. Because the report from the city engineers and managers, project managers, reiterated their position in November with slight changes. In November they said we would finish the stadium by the 27th of March 2009. In February they said we would finish it on the 17th of March 2009. So we said, as far as we are concerned, the city is consistent. FIFA has shifted the post. FIFA must go home, and in April, they must come with a reason why they think this is a problem. Because I was present in the Confederation Cup games in Germany in 2006. I was there in what is that little town in old Eastern Europe. Can't remember its name now.
Leipzig.
I'm sure. Yeah. You see, once we were in Leipzig, Brazil was placed in Leipzig. And even as they were preparing for the game next week, the Leipzigers were still finishing the stadium. And you say, what is the big deal? This city says they will finish at the end of March, and the game is in July. In Leipzig, it was the following week. What is your problem? When we went to Hanover, the road to the stadium was still under construction. And that was not a major issue with respect to that. And we said, we think perhaps we are just being hard enough and go home. And in April, we must finalize it. So as it is now, as far as we at the LOC board are concerned, and as far as the city council is concerned, they are still on track in terms of an agreement of November last year. If FIFA wants to change the time frame, they must motivate what has now come to their mind. Escalation, of course. The learned people in the business tell us that it is in the nature of the construction industry for escalation to occur. Building material, professional fees, they give a list of things. Our responsibility is to make sure that the escalations remain within the percentage which is accepted in the year. You can't help escalation if they are natural in that field, but we want to keep them within the budget, which is why the Minister of Finance has already voted an additional $2 billion, yes, to take care of those unforeseen and unavoidable escalation. MIG and sport facilities, when? We hope it will be done by this financial year, PG. We have it to be finished by June 2008. Because we really are in a hurry to get on the system. We were promised, that it would be ring-fenced. Minister answered the question in the National Assembly to confirm that it will be ring-fenced. But we have no experience of that. Because of your question again on the concurrency of this function, you can decide here what should happen. But ultimately, we are not feared. We are feared. So the other fear makes up his mind and say, "I back up now." So we would prefer that our percentage of the MIG, not the whole MIG, the MIG must remain. What is left of it, it must remain the PPLG. Because it's not the whole MIG as complete. Electricity had this experience already. And they went this route of saying, give us our percentage. We would rather do it ourselves. That is why we are moving in that direction. Now, Mrs. Ramula. Now, from MVP to higher competition. You know, I was born on a farm in Adelaide, in the Eastern Cape. Right in the Winterberg Mountain. You know, Errol Mocker. Errol and I were born on the same farm, his grandfather's farm. We grew up together in the mountain. He played rugby for Wanderers, I played rugby for Headline. That is why we became very good friends on the team. So I am very passionate about the rural school and farm school. I don't agree with the education. I'm a crazy man, maybe. Because I raised this thing, Jefferson, when Professor Carter asked my farm schools will never get a fair deal until you do what Afrikaners did after 1948. Now, I had the advantage also of having worked after passing standard 6. I went to work for Mr. Willie Tuproy. He was a farmer in Shambor. Now, Omwin was the last principal of a farm school for white children there at the Butter Farm. That building is still there today. It is the last school. He was called your teacher because of the last principal. But after 1948, school children from the farm were taken to boarding school in the town.
Yeah.
And there they got good education.
Mm.
They were exposed to good facilities, and they were exposed to a broader understanding of life. This is where I grew up. You see? And like I say, I always rely on my own experience in this thing. They were taken down every Sunday afternoon in their parents' cars and things. Every Friday afternoon they came back home. And this is what I was proposing to the Department of Education. And because our rural farm workers do not have good cars, we were proposing a bus system to transport them. And well, we were told to be very crazy. Yes, it did not work. I hope one day it will work. Because, honest to God, I think this is the way to go. I visit the place where I was born from time to time. I see the skeletons of schools that were put up. I talk. Most of the farmers in that area are people whose parents or brothers grew up with us in this farm. So I talked to them. what happened to this school? Why is this one school? And all the other questions, they will tell you. The teacher arrived on Tuesday late, and she would hike back home on Thursday, so she was at school for 2 days, for 3 days. And the children invariably could not pass, they were not getting proper education, not to mention other things. So I'm talking about rural schools. I agree with you. The situation might be different in Soweto, that place is not here. It might be different in Santan and so on. But in those farm schools, Slangwook, and those areas, I've not been to Slangwook, so I want to go there one day. I suspect they are talking about that kind of situation. And I think we must do something about it. From the sport and recreation side, as I say, I believe the solution is what I call second school facility. In other words, to identify a locality and all the schools around there, they can utilize that. You can have your shaved grass around the school, but I'm talking about proper schools, facilities, because there's a difference between a field which is used for school, for rugby, and the proper sports field. And I think we're not going to have the money to build things for every school. Let us build them for clusters of what I call second schools. I have, well, we do have a tournament which we sponsor for schools, for primary school tournament. It is erratic. It's a good tournament, but it is erratic. Good in that it puts some money for these rural farm schools. But erratic because it does not have a bridging mechanism of these kids into the normal school tournament. Because we must be very careful not to ghetto one school athletes from the farm and keep them as a permanently developing entity, when in fact I believe they have the better chances of succeeding. So rural schools need the resources, I agree with you. But rural schools also need restructuring, I think. I don't see why we should have a farm school in Krabrenet with four children and two teachers. It doesn't make sense. Then you have another school elsewhere with 120 children and two teachers. It just does not make sense. It is not in the church, we'll say it's a bad stewardship of the resources God gave us. I think we need to relook at the rural schools, we need to restructure them, and we must build and use them in a way that helps these kids to get out of the rural mentality and become ordinary South African citizens whose horizons have also been broadened. When are we going to do this, you ask me. Ma'am, I don't know. I really don't know. But I know that it can be done within 5 financial years, within the lifetime of this strategic plan, elements of this as well. For instance, Gert and I go to this partner, where we found this young chap. We go there in 2005. And we find a youngster sitting there, surrounded by trophies and medals. We ask the Catholic teacher. They all need, yes. So we talk to him. He's a very good man of company. And say, what are your dreams? He says, I want to run in the next marathon or whatever. What is that? He didn't know, but he knew there was something coming within his mind. Ultimately, we agreed with the MEC to go and talk to his family, and he will stay for his preparation for this marathon in Denver. Take him to the High Performance Center in Pretoria. I was driving from Mthatha to when I received the phone from her, look at our boy. I said, what boy? The boy from Pumalang. Because I was in the car, there was no television. He was winning the Comrades Marathon with only 2 months in the High Performance Center. He was winning the Comrades Marathon. So I'm saying it can be done within the financial year, but the elements of it will take a much longer time, and it will take maybe 5 years. I'm very careful on this. I was asked this question in New Zealand in 1991. Now you say that South African rugby is moving towards unification. I said, yes. How long do you think it will take to have a rugby team that reflects the demographic of the country? Ask Eddie Tonks, the chairman of the rugby. Said, well, you know, we could do our thing right. It will take us 5 years. I was wrong. I was totally wrong. Which provinces do you think will unite quickly? I said, Western Province and Natal. I was also wrong. So I'm sometimes wrong on this thing. But this is what I fervently believe, that if we put our money where our mouth is, and we put our will and our energy behind it, it really is doable. It's not impossible. The reason why we are asking Hajira, Mr. Mashiko, to get started with this sports science support program as a principal.
Yes.
It's because we think this is how to go. And she has gone around and I'll say to this institution, they agree with us, which is say very funny for academics because they are very PQYMPT in us and their approach. But they agree because we told them, we're not going to give money to one of you. We want to give money to all of you on condition that you identify where this academy for cricket, where this academy for netball, for athletics, for rugby, and then we fund you for that. And you access this scheme to our children. We have agreed. That we believe will start implementing in this financial year, this coming financial year, element of it. I don't know how far, because it depends on how much you'll give us. But we don't know how much. We asked this thing to be costed. It's 240 million rand per year to achieve that. 240 million rand per year, which is half our total budget. So we don't know how far we will go and when we will achieve all these things. Will we intervene, ma'am? That's part of our intervention. We don't believe we must fold our arms and dream about South Africa when all her children will have this skin developed to that level. This is precisely why, yes, we are intervening, and yes, we will continue to intervene. We must continue to intervene. Sport, the concurrent function, what do I think? Now you want me to lose my job. I knew there was something problematic. You see, because in September 2009, I never forget the date. Because it is the same weekend after, what was it, 9-11. 9-11 was during the week. That weekend, I was asked in the Eastern Cape by the ANC and her allies to make a presentation on this issue. How do we deal with the concurrence of functions? And how do we deal with the governance structure that we have to make it more effective? I developed a paper, I'll send you a copy if you're interested. I still have it. But I was castigated roundly by everybody, by the NCOP, and Naledi was chairperson then, by the ANC, Sidney Mfamadi and Frene Genwala, she was a speaker then, and by the National Party, what's her name? The great hub. Sheila Cameron. I didn't know where she came into the picture. Everybody just put a mark on my clothing. There was a similar Wingate record. You want us to lose our job? They killed me. I don't know why. Because I was a premier. But all I was saying was, We can't have a country where everybody does the same thing, whichever way they want. We must redefine the functions of the three spheres, and we must also move away from the spheres to the tiers. But of course, the rest is history now. I have not changed my view. I raised it in the, one of the government, the Khuta, when we were discussing the IGR. Before that as well, that all this is tinkering with the edit. It is not a fundamental restructuring of our government. This is my honest belief. I have lost the debate. I'm not debating the issues anymore now. I'm just giving people a chance to... It's not the first debate I lose, Chief. I've lost many debates before, but years after, people come around and say, okay, you are right. I am convinced on this one as well. So already they are coming around, but they are coming by federal. Manga, manga. I certainly believe in my 55, the tears and what they should do. Now, I have addressed the MIG and the cycling, the horse of trail, but I agree with you on cycling. And this is what I said since I came to this department. Because everybody was talking about this academy. What do you mean? You see, South Africans are very brave people. They even use terms they don't understand. And the more I interrogated it, the more I knew they don't understand what they're talking about. Because an academy has to be a specialized facility.
Yes. Yes.
Specialized. You can't have a facility which does everything and not create within the
manner.
That's a high performance facility. But now we're moving in the same direction. We agree they must develop the high performance facilities into specialized academies. We also urge the provinces to have their sub-provincial entities, like the one of the SHAP, which we encourage very much. Netball courts. I really want to sit down with you. After looking at you give me the details of your netball courts and your
court.
Other tennis courts. I can tell you, we'll give you tennis rackets and balls. But you have to tell us what size. Because we don't know what.
I'll do that.
I thought you were going to say it was in there's another place I went to in Limpopo, Kiani. There's a tennis court there.
No, this it's one is in the Bochum side.
Okay. Mm. It's well constructed, but there are no coaches there. You see, these kids are hitting the ball to the sky all the time. I'm glad you are interested in that because I want to talk about all the things. Now, this is what we expect from the members of Parliament. We expect the questions, Chief. They are very helpful. But we also expect specificity. When you say, in my village, I used to be a soccer star, but they don't play soccer anymore. Tell us where it is. Then we send the team development, the club development team, to go and revive it and make it happen. Soccer, yes, this is what I'm talking about. I was going to say, tell us where is this where you play soccer and volleyball and all these things, so that we can send people to go and revive those interests. We'll have to revive them at the school, and it's good to know that you are the principal. Then you can help us with your colleagues. We will do it, that is the easiest part of it. The funding part of it is far more difficult, but with your help, we'll get a bigger budget next year. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister. I think we've exhausted all the questions, and I have said in the own that we might actually have put the food better part of the presentation. It's already 1 o'clock now. This meeting at this point. I with you as to when you do a meeting. We're going to object. We're going to come to check here. So, thank you very much, Minister. And thank you, Minister. Your presence will be looking, I think, the staff in answering all the questions that were put to you. And I'm going to ask the Honourable from Sudiban, who is a member of the committee, especially thank you on behalf of the committee. No.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, thank you very much. I must say that seeing that we have a minister and a deputy here today, with the whole team from the department, it gives her a great pleasure. And one would like to see more of these kinds of interaction amongst ourselves. And you will find that in many other departments, extremely difficult, honestly speaking, to get ministers and deputies into a meeting. But be as it may, we appreciate your presence here today. I think we had some fruitful discussions and questions were answered and so forth. Just to say that I even pity the minister, because the minister was answering 90% of the questions and the rest of the team is very quiet here from the department. And I think it's about unfair towards the minister and the deputy minister.
Those are politics. We are beyond. How long does it?